ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What happens when medicine is sold like a makeover?
Their marketing is very good.
Clinics with five-star reviews selling miracle cures.
I left that place thinking I found myself a solution.
But it's your body that pays the price.
I had one cheek higher than the other, one cheek further out from my nose.
Before and After, a new series on how medical hype spreads online, who profits and who pays. Search for Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we'll separate out the bills, the gun laws will be separate, and then the laws on hate crimes and migration will proceed. But we will not be proceeding with the racial vilification provisions because it's clear that that will not have support.
He couldn't get it through the parliament, and so Anthony Albanese had to change course. Prime Minister has removed a racial vilification offence from Labor's proposed hate speech laws and will now deal with gun control in a separate bill. The package came after the Bondi attack in a bid to stamp out anti-Semitism.
We deal with the parliament that we have.
Prime Minister,
which is unfortunate because that was one of the recommendations of the Special Envoy on Anti-Semitism, Gillian Siegel, a clear and unambiguous recommendation.
The draft bill had come under huge criticism from the Greens and the opposition leader, Susan Lee, who described it as half-baked and unsalvageable. So, what was in the doomed bill, and was it really that bad? Today, Professor Kath Gelber, an expert in regulating hate speech from the University of Queensland, unpacks it all. I'm Sam Hawley, on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Kath, let's turn to the federal government's proposed new laws in a moment. But I think it's good to start by having a look at what's been happening in New South Wales. After the Bondi attack, the calls for action and for change, they were really intense. And we have seen that in the past, haven't we? After major events, terrorist attacks and tragedies like this. It's not uncommon.
No, it's not uncommon. Of course, after the Port Arthur massacre, there was a call for immediate changes to gun laws. After major terrorist events, of course, 9/11 in 2001, but then London bombings, there were calls for a really significant overhaul of counter-terrorism provisions. Lawmaking in the particular area of regulating hate speech is particularly difficult because you have to balance the competing imperatives of ensuring that people are allowed to have freedom of speech on matters of sometimes really significant differences of opinion and even caustic debate. But then you need to draw the line at genuinely harmful speech, which is something I've been arguing for decades.
Well, let's look briefly at what the Premier Chris Minns has been doing in New South Wales. He initially targeted protesters. He was really sympathetic to the concerns from Jewish leaders about these regular pro-Palestinian protests over the Gaza war.
How can it be that a protest can take place in the state and there's a swastika tattooed on the Star of David on a poster in the middle of the city, or photos of the Ayatollah, the leader of Iran, or posters or flags of Hezbollah or Hamas? How can we say that protests that have these signs have no bearing on either the culture, the temperature, or even extreme actions within our community? Of
course, this needs. He was really, Kath, linking those protests to the attack. The two, from what he was saying, could not be separated. What did you make of that?
So we're in a very fraught and difficult environment. There is absolutely no doubt that since October 7, there's been a significant rise in anti-Semitism in Australia, and I absolutely recognise that, and we have to do everything we can to stamp out anti-Semitism and other forms of racism. So there are lots and lots of factors that contributed to Bondi. What I think is very difficult to do is to draw a direct causal connection between the pro-Palestine protests, which overwhelmingly overwhelmingly were protests for humanity. These were protests against terrible suffering that is going on in Gaza. And that's, in fact, very similar to the urge that says let's prevent and stop anti-Semitism and other forms of racism. I think there are more areas of commonality between people who want these really dreadful events to end than was implied by the Premier.
Well, of course, Chris Menz did act by introducing new laws allowing police to block protests at certain times in New South Wales. Just explain how that works, and are you concerned by that?
It's always a concern when anti-protest laws don't differentiate between what's called peaceful civil protest and events that are violent and that cause harm. Interestingly, the anti-protest laws that were passed don't prevent a rally or a protest from going ahead, so to speak. They just don't give it authorisation, which means if the rally or protest does go ahead, people can be required to move on. And if the police tell them to move on and they don't, then they can be arrested. So generally speaking, the ability to ban protests that are peaceful and civil and that pose no risk to society is a bad idea in a democratic society.
All right. Well, the New South Wales Premier has also cracked down on what he calls hate preachers, and he now also wants to ban phrases such as globalise the intifada.
We just saw what globalise the intifada is. 15 dead people on the shores of Bondi Beach. I mean, we know what it is, a violent uprising that people want to globalise from the Middle East to places like Australia.
Now, there is a parliamentary committee, Kath, considering that. But just remind me what that means so we can understand why he wants it banned. You know, there's different interpretations of these sorts of phrases, isn't there?
Precisely. So what has happened in Australian hate speech law for over 30 years is that the law has taken a principled approach that seeks to define when speech crosses the line into harm. And in doing so, we always take context into account. So in seeking to ban individual slogans, what the New South Wales Premier is trying to do is overturn that premise and say, we think that there are some slogans that are so bad that they're incontrovertibly harmful. So until now in Australian law, the only time that we have banned specific gestures and symbols as incontrovertibly harmful is in relation to Nazi symbols and slogans. What the Premier is trying to do is extend that premise or that principle to a new phrase, which is hotly contested, and the meaning of which really depends on the context in which it's used. Now, it is possible, of course, to use the phrase globalise the intifada in an incredibly anti-Semitic way, a way that calls for the abolition of the State of Israel, for example. That phrase is deeply connected to events of violence. But it's also true that we live in a complex society and that where marches like when 300,000 people march across the Harbour Bridge in favour of human rights for Palestinians, where those slogans appear in those marches, it's not true that those 300,000 people meant that by those slogans. If somebody means, I support human rights, I support an end to discrimination, that wouldn't be substantively harmful.
So some would argue intifada is a call for solidarity with the Palestinian people. Others say it's anti-Semitic.
Yes.
Same goes for River to the Sea, I suppose. Some people would argue that that's about freedom and equality. Others would say it's anti-Semitic.
Yes, that's precisely the problem. I mean, it is true that the River to the Sea slogan has its origins in Hamas and in Hamas's desire to destroy the State of Israel, and that is fundamentally anti-Semitic. There's no doubt about that. But it's also true that when 300,000 people walk across the Harbour Bridge, that's not what they mean by that phrase. So laws that try to oversimplify these kinds of complexities are likely to get it wrong. They're also likely not to be held constitutionally valid.
All right, well, let's now turn, Kath, to the federal government's response.
The Prime Minister has recalled Parliament 2 weeks early to debate tougher hate speech laws and to set up a national gun buyback scheme.
This is complex legislation that the Prime Minister wants to pass in less than 2 days, but he refutes that it's being rushed.
The Prime Minister has challenged the opposition to take it or leave it.
The terrorists at Bondi Beach had hatred in their minds, but guns in their hands. This bill will get rid of both of those issues, will address both those issues.
Now, under the initial proposal, it would have been illegal to promote or incite racial hatred. Just remind me what that was all about and why it was so controversial.
Okay, there's a lot in it.
Yes.
There are two primary areas that concern this conversation. One is a new part that prohibits hate groups. It's an attempt to deal with extremist groups that promote a hate-based ideology that leads to the kind of violence that we saw in Bondi. I don't have an objection to this. In principle, it looks like a valid and legitimate government purpose. There's one problem with that, which is the definition of hate groups, that it also includes advocating engaging in a hate crime. And the definition of advocates is quite large and capacious, and I think that they need to tidy that up.
Right.
The racial vilification offence is interesting. Just last year, both New South Wales and Victoria have implemented new incitement of racial hatred offences. What the federal proposal is the promotion or incitement of hatred. So they've added the word promote. That really broadens it, and that creates a new challenge in Australian law. The Prime Minister made it clear what he wanted to do was push the boundaries of what was permissible under the constitutional implied freedom of political communication. And certainly by trying to include the word promote, he's doing that. He's pushing those limits. A lot of people would regard the word promote as too broad for a criminal offence. The new criminal offence requires intent. It has to happen on the basis of race. The conduct needs to cause a reasonable member of the target group to feel intimidated, fear harassment or violence, or fear for their safety. And again, the inclusion there of fearing harassment, that's pretty broad.
Yeah.
And then there's another clause to it. It's a very complicated provision. There's another clause to it, which is the dissemination of ideas of superiority over or hatred of another person. So I think there are elements of this offence that are good. I don't have a problem in principle with a narrowly drawn incitement of hatred offence in the Commonwealth criminal law that would mirror New South Wales and Victoria and WA in some way. But this one goes a lot further.
Interesting as well that the National Socialist Network, which is, of course, a neo-Nazi group, it's just disbanded to get around this, hasn't it?
Yes, that's true. In Germany, for example, where they have really specific laws banning symbols and slogans of the Nazi regime, the far right just invent new ones. We do know that Nazis will go underground. I don't think that's a reason not to legislate to prohibit hate groups. It will be a challenge for the intelligence organisations. If this law were to prevent a Nazi rally happening on the steps of Parliament House in Sydney, I'd be all for it.
So this bill attracted broad criticism from the Greens and Susan Lee, the opposition leader, who said she wants a greater focus on radical Islam.
Why are we not tackling radical Islamic extremist hate preaching? Why does the bill not mention radical Islam once? And where are the strong measures to eradicate anti-Semitism without impinging on free speech?
It's not clear to me how this bill doesn't target extreme Islamic groups. That's just not clear to me at all. And I think what's actually happening is that inside the coalition, the Nationals are opposed to the gun buyback component or the gun regulation component. And within the Liberals, there's an increasing divide between those who support this kind of legislation in principle and those who don't. There are still significant numbers of people in the Liberal Party in particular who think that this kind of law is an overreach on free speech grounds. And I don't know what, I genuinely don't know what Susan Lee means by saying that she wants laws that better target radical Islam. I honestly have no idea what she means.
So how cautious do you think politicians need to be when enacting these sort of laws? Is this, in your view, the right path forward?
I think there are elements of this federal bill that are good. What we really need at the moment is leadership that says that the standards of public debate are not the same as the standards we require for criminality. The ethical standards that we should ask people to employ in public debate over all of these topics should include and involve understanding when others are suffering and being willing to hear them, being willing to understand that if they interpret something you say in a way that you didn't intend, that maybe you should take that into account the next time. instead of what we have now, which is this hardening of positions by people who say, I have a right to say this, and other people saying, when you say that, I feel scared. And they do, genuine, like people believe this. I'm not saying that they're not genuine in these beliefs, but we need to be able to reach out to each other across these differences and have an ethical standard for public discourse that differs from the criminal standard.
Professor Kath Gilber is the Deputy Executive Dean and Associate Dean Academic in the Faculty of Humanity, Arts and Social Science at the University of Queensland. I spoke with her before the Prime Minister announced the racial vilification offence would be dropped. Parliament resumes today. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Sam Dunn. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.